party people. Today on the podcast, we have a poet and a president and a psychology major. And we promise you'll love it. This is the Bechdel Test. Hey guys, welcome to the Bechdel Test. We have an exciting...
Thank you for welcoming me, Sophia.
You're welcome. Honestly, you're
welcome. Hey everyone, and my name's Emily.
And before you continue there, thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our sponsors. We have Tico's and Milk and Cookies sponsoring the show today.
Yeah!
Yeah! Milk and Cookies. Wouldn't a cookie taste good right now? Located in Princeton, Milk and Cookies lovingly bakes the finest Good Fresh cookies around. Good Fresh cookies, nice cold milk baked with love. Find them on 20 Nassau Street. Or at milkandcookies.online.
What's your favorite cookie from Milk and Cookies?
Sophia? I love the coffee toffee cookie.
And you like the coffee toffee cookie?
It's
what makes
really
you like the
good.
Coffee toffee cookie?
What'd you say?
What makes you like the coffee toffee cookie?
Coffee. I like coffee and toffee. I also like toffee. And they actually gave us a coffee toffee cookie. But
wait, one more time. Where do you go to find
it? What'd you say?
Wait, where do you go online to find Milk and Cookies?
You go to milkandcookies.online.
How do you spell that?
It's actually, I know you're thinking it may be A-N-D, like mm-mm. That and milk and
it's
cookies,
like mac
but
and
it's
cheese.
Actually N. It's actually N.
Like N apostrophe.
N. No apostrophe.
Milk just N.
Cookies.online.
What does the N stand for?
And. Okay, we're
Let's
also sponsored
forward.
By Tico's.
Let's move forward. I personally love and adore Tico's. They have juice, smoothies, acai bowls, quesadillas, nitro coffee. And my favorite juice in the entire world is, you know what, you love it, Tico's Happy Times.
Emily, you read it wrong. It says Emily's favorite is the Happy Times juice.
Yeah, I was trying to do a more natural thing where I don't read directly off the script.
If you could read directly off the script, that'd be good, I think.
Okay, yeah. Juice. It's the simple pleasures in life. Find them on 33 Witherspoon Street or at ticosprinceton.com. Was that better?
That
you killed
great.
That. You killed that. wait, where do we find them again? Online?
Yeah. Online, it would be ticosprinceton.com.
I didn't know they served nitro coffee there.
I didn't either. I'm afraid of coffee, so I've never tried that before.
Emily, I heard you learned something about the catacombs this week.
I learned something about the catacombs this week. I was swiping through my TikTok, as one would, and this girl was like, do not enter the catacombs in a place where you're not supposed to.
And Emily was like, oh my God,
I was literally just thinking about doing it. I bought a headlamp and I was ready to go. But Yeah, go ahead.
Which catacombs? Like where?
The ones in Paris. Yeah.
Paris.
Les catacombs in Paris.
Oui, oui, oui.
What most people don't know is that the catacombs are all underneath the city of Paris. Mm. And there's a small, small section that you can tour through.
Mm.
But they're all over the place. And apparently there are people that live in the catacombs.
Is that real?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I looked it up and there was like an article that was talking about it, but I couldn't tell how credible it was. But basically, here, I took some notes. So let me read off
was
my notes.
Was it .gov? Onlytrust.gov. I bet it wasn't .gov.
These are the people that live in the catacombs. I'm sorry that you guys...
Oh my gosh.
Sorry that us listeners
I don't like
can't
it.
See.
I don't like
but
it.
But it is a terrifying sight. And apparently, like, they really don't like when... like tourists try to enter the catacombs.
Well, I would like if someone entered my home.
And so if like they will run up to you and steal your light and your map.
Oh my God.
And then you're just stuck in the darkness and you have no way out. And in 1793, Philibert Aspert went missing in the catacombs.
That's how you pronounce that. For
it
sure.
is. After entering them down a set of stairs at the hospital where he worked, where he was never seen alive again, and he was found 11 years later. And I just want to dedicate this episode to.
We're also sponsored by him, Philip, whatever his name is.
God bless him.
I want to dedicate
okay?
this episode to Philibert, which is probably how it's pronounced.
Philibert.
But he's been dead a while, right?
Yes, but I just feel so bad for him.
I do too.
That does
like,
suck.
If he had seen the TikTok I saw, he wouldn't have done that.
That would be inconvenient.
I'm just trying to spread the knowledge.
Well, he
in
might
case
have seen
you guys
the TikTok too, but he just got curious.
Well, Philibert, he didn't fare well, so I just would like to dedicate this episode to him.
This is our public service announcement. Only enter the catacombs with a tour guide in the right place.
Yes,
thank you,
exactly.
Thank you,
or
thank
the people
you.
Will take your lamp.
Yes, they will, and that's no good. Okay, we're going to introduce our guest now. Oh, so yeah. I prepared something special. Spoiler alert, our guest today is part of the Songline Slam Poetry Group at Princeton. And so in that vein, I wrote her introduction, then told ChatGPT to create a poem out of it. So here's that. I think it's really good. In Princeton's realm where intellects convene, Lajeja stands, a leader serene. Cap and gown's president, her role profound. Interclub council echoes with her sound. Psychology senior, in studies she delves. African-American studies, the knowledge shelves. Slam poet extraordinaire, her words ignite. In the podcast spotlight, she takes flight. A scholar, a poet, in wisdom she spun. Lajeja Wright, a radiant sun.
Whoa!
What do you think? What do you think about that?
No, I love it. I love it. I do. It's right here, right in the chest, right in the heart.
You're never really worried about
I could. I'm a humble gal, but I could.
You could. Mm-hmm. And own it. How are you doing today?
I'm actually doing great today. I'm having a grand old time already, I gotta say. Yeah.
Good. So I guess for starters, you are the president of Cap and Gown, the fourth oldest eating club at Princeton. So what interested you most about Cap when you were deciding where you wanted to bicker?
Honestly, I was just comfortable there. I was comfortable from the second that I stepped into the club. I, of course, had some friends in the club before I joined in. But honestly, I didn't really want to bicker anywhere else, because when I think about the kind of club that I want to be a part of, the kind of environment I want to be a part of, I want to sit, I want to laugh, I want to tell a corny joke. I do love a corny joke. And I want to tell a corny joke, and I want people to laugh with me, also at me if they want to. And I just felt that a cap. I was just comfortable, and it felt like a place that I can make my own. Also make my own kinds of relationships that I wanted to, too.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. And so now you're the president of CAP.
I am.
So, like, break that down. What's that like?
Break that down. Let's see. So I would say there are two most salient parts of being the president of CAP to me. One part is the team that I'm working with, the officer corps. Then the other part is obviously the club and the people. Right. And I love that place. I love both of those parts of it. And I would say with the corps, honestly, we haven't really said it much to each other, and when they hear this, I think they're going to laugh, and they're probably called Courtney. But I just love us working together so much, and I just love I love how we collaborate. I love our vibe. I love how we treat each other. And so that's been a really nice thing, a part of this year, just to live in just a comfortable, happy, fun environment where we're joking. We just played Gang Beasts before I came here. Oh my God. Gang Beasts is so fun, guys. So it's a game. We love games. First it was Mario Party, now it's Gang Beasts.
Okay.
So it's a two to four player game, and they're these little characters there, and they're like these little blobby guys, and they just run around and they wiggle, and you fight each other, and they're these blobby guys, and you're like throwing punches.
Wait,
and, like,
is this online?
It's on the PS5.
This is not I was picturing in person.
Not quite.
You just pick little blobs.
Yeah. Okay. So PS5. Okay,
they hire them. They come. Sorry. You don't have to pay them that much. They're just going to go for $5 an hour.
I need to give them as a cookie.
Yeah. That's all you need.
Wait, so you're playing the blob game.
Indeed. We're playing the blob game, and we're throwing punches, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, we're checking in. We're asking about days. We're joking.
Yeah.
While I'm checking you. So
right.
How it works. And then, honestly, the club is just fun. The club is just full of beautiful people, and just a really nice spirit and a really nice energy. And those are the two things that I would characterize as my presidency. And obviously, you know, myself doing it and leading it. Mm-hmm. But those are the two things that make it feel special to me and that make it feel important.
Do you feel like CAP, like, has, I feel like I've heard it has a reputation of being, like, the chillest eating club. Do you feel like it lives up to that expectation?
I would say that it lives up to that expectation at the same time that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Because being in the club, the energy is off the charts sometimes. So last weekend, we had our CAP prom.
Okay.
CAP prom was a grand old time. People were running around the house.
Yes.
CAP prom was a time. And so when I think about events like that and energy that we've had like that, I can't honestly claim that we are a chill club. Yeah. But I think that the chillness comes from the fact that you can just be yourself there.
Yeah.
And you can sit in one of the quieter parts of the club, and you can read your book, or you can do your homework, or you can go to the movie room for our weekly movie nights and literally just say jokes loud as hell.
Yeah.
Just,
mm-hmm.
Can I curse?
Yes. You can curse.
Okay.
You can curse. Yes, you can.
We prefer it.
Oh, yeah, it's so fun. Okay, so good to know. I forgot the question, but yeah, that's that.
The chillness of the evening.
Yes,
say your favorite events that the club puts on?
My favorite events? Okay, so as we discussed, I'm a cinephile. Okay,
right,
so we have weekly movie nights.
Okay.
Love a weekly movie night. We have popcorn. We have jokes. We have fun drinks. And it's a really great time. Oh, we also have Cap Mondays.
Okay.
And those are usually chiller events compared to our nights out. Mm. One of the most recent Cap Mondays, we had apple cider donuts. Ooh. That I actually went to pick up with our social chair. His name is James. That was great.
Shout out,
the
James.
Week before, shout out, James. The week before, we had crumble cookies.
I love crumble cookies.
Oh, so good.
But it's about milk and cookies. Please don't mention any other brands.
Wait, so what's the most like recent movie you watched for Cat Movie Night? Who decides?
The Room decides. The Room decides. Really? That's awesome.
That sounds hostile.
It does.
Especially the cinephiles versus like.
They're like, no, I want to watch.
Let's watch Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, we do series and then we do individual movies. The last movie that we watched was The Meg.
Okay.
That's right, The Meg.
Oh, okay.
It was so. It's a movie about a big prehistoric shark.
Right. Yeah.
It was so cool.
Is it Rain Wilson in that? And or is that the second?
It is. No, it is. And Jason Statham. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Exactly.
I know.
Mm-hmm. You're a Meg head, aren't you?
That was a good one. And that was a really good one.
Is the Meg like the modern day Jaws? Is it the Jaws? Same type?
Jaws. She's from New Jersey.
My accent. I'm so embarrassed.
South Jersey.
That's okay. Okay.
I am from New Jersey, actually.
Which part of New Jersey?
I am from North Jersey.
North Jersey.
The Dirty Jers, Pattis, New Jersey.
I'm from South Jersey.
I'm going to ignore that. So.
Please don't fight. Don't fight. They're already throwing punches, guys.
But you went to a boarding school in Connecticut.
I did.
What was that experience like?
That experience was a time. That's probably the best way I can describe it. It was a time of growth. It was a time of learning, and it was also a time of family and community and learning how I define those things.
Okay.
And I would say that's probably the best way that I could describe my time.
So how do you find yourself defining those things as you write?
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, in terms of family and in terms of relationships, I think I very quickly figured out that I couldn't just enter into the rest of my life, especially like once I started boarding school, I very quickly figured out that I couldn't just enter the rest of my life without being very explicit and being very intentional about the way that I develop relationships and the way that I developed the community around me. I'm a girl that's very big on community, really, and on relationships and on warmth, especially in my community. And I think boarding school is the time just rife with self-discovery and rife with questions and this uncertainty, and obviously especially ending it in a pandemic, I very quickly again had to figure out how I defined community and how I defined relationships. And so I'd say now I just find it as intentionality and honesty.
Yeah,
I think I had to because of how much honesty and how much intentionality was necessary for the pandemic and pretty much losing contact with all the with all the close friends that I had, and especially being an international boarding school. So people were coming from other countries, but also come from different states. So I actually barely had friends back home in Jersey. A lot of my friends were, literally one of my best friends, she is from and lives in China. So we just didn't really speak when the pandemic happened. It was literally a 12-hour time difference.
Wow.
And you're studying, sorry.
No, you go. Go ahead.
No, you're studying psychology, right?
I am.
So do you
feel
like there are a lot of intersections between like how you're defining these things about community and your relationships and intentionality and your studies? Right now.
Wow, I love that question. I would say yes. Yeah, absolutely. I love my journey with psychology so much because it wasn't ever really a question of why psychology. It was more so why not. And the way that I looked at the world has just always been central to people. It's always been central to people making decisions and how people are relating in an environment. And so relating that to psychology just made so much sense. Yeah. And you know, with what I've learned about things like trauma, about things like development, about things like relationships, I've always been aware, and obviously I've become much more aware throughout my studies, that those things are so important in someone's life. And I really do believe that the relationships that you have around you, the community that you're a part of, that creates you. Obviously, there are so many other factors that contribute to that, but I think that that's one of the biggest, if not the biggest thing. So, absolutely.
That's so cool.
Now I have a question for you. So, Something I find like insane is like the amount of different high school experiences people at Princeton had.
Yeah.
And so I went to just a big public school in Atlanta. I think Simon went to public school. Yeah. You went to Catholic school, Emily.
Yeah.
And so something I like to ask people is like, would you send your kids, if you were to have kids, don't mean to be presumptuous, but would you send your kids to a similar boarding school as the Hotchkiss school that you went to? Or what would you change about your own experience for your own children?
I would say I really would leave it up to them, and I would leave it up to them while being very honest. And mm-hmm. I say that because, honestly, I can't say a yes or a no completely. The reason that I can't say a no is because I'm very aware of how many opportunities I now have access to because mm-hmm. of the fact that I went to a private boarding school. Mm-hmm. And honestly, me even being there in the first place, I was in a program called New Jersey Seeds mm-hmm. that helps, quote, low-income, high-achieving students go to private day and boarding school. So that's how I ended up at Hotchkiss. And so I'm very aware that because of the path in life that I chose, I now have access to opportunities that other people, other kids in my city don't. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, I can't confidently say, no, I wouldn't send my kids there, because I understand the type of city that I come from, the type of cities that are similar to mine. The kids in cities like that don't really get the opportunity to go to schools like Princeton or go to schools like Hotchkiss. Mm-hmm. So I would love to give my children the same opportunity that I had. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a PWI just like this one in the northeast corner of Connecticut, and obviously speaking from my own experience as a Black girl growing up there, that wasn't easy. Sure. I won't ever pretend that that was easy. And mm-hmm. it's still not easy here at Princeton. And knowing that just any Black student, any student of color, because those schools just aren't built for students of color. They're especially not built for Black students. And I just don't know how confidently I can say yes, knowing that that is an experience that is going to change you, and mm-hmm. not always in a good way. I think that environments like Princeton, environments like Hotchkiss, I think they introduce a lot of grief, really, that people don't really, that people shouldn't have to go through. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you figure out who you are. You question things and you change, and hopefully at the end that's for the best. But that's why I'm split on that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so kind of in that vein, in an article in Tap Into Patterson, your neighborhood news online, you described the switch from an inner city school to an open green campus to be a, quote, culture shock. Mm-hmm. So could you describe this sort of shock to us?
Yeah, I would say, well, the first shock is that that was the first time of my life that I was around people that didn't look like me mm-hmm. for the majority of the, you know, of the community and of the environment that I was a part of. So just in that nature, I just had to relearn how I held myself and how I saw myself in an environment. And I would say that was the biggest thing, because I was very comfortable with myself at home, with what I believed in at home, with the jokes that I made, with the things that I said, with the things that mm-hmm. I thought. Right. And once I got there, and actually not even the fact that it was a PWI, but the fact that it was international, the fact that it was in Connecticut. I had never been to Connecticut before. Mm-hmm. I had no reason to. Yeah. But that was probably one of the main things that I had to reconcile with, is just relearning how to hold myself in this environment that was so different from home. Mm-hmm. And it was so different because of the types of people that were there. Mm-hmm. It was so different because of the things that I was expected to do. And, you know, the way that my mind was challenged, very similarly to here, of course, because we're all here. We all know what the Princeton grind is. But it was very similar there in that, you know, I was being asked to complete these things academically while at the same time learning how to talk to this person that is coming from a literal different continent and probably believes in completely different things and thinks completely differently to me. And so that all coming together was just so potent, mm-hmm. I want to say. So that was probably the biggest part of the culture shock, was just relearning how to exist, honestly, in an environment that was made of so many different things.
Do you think that made your transition to Princeton a lot easier?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. That's probably one of the main things that I'm grateful for having gone to Hotchkiss mm-hmm. is that I understand what it means to be in an environment and just not completely know the person that's next to you. And that's mm-hmm. okay. And I will say that's also one of the most beautiful things that I think I got from Hotchkiss, because I, again, relationships, community, but I just really believe in sitting next to someone and looking them in the eye and learning who they are and learning what they are. Yeah. And I think that that's what makes a room fun. That's mm-hmm. what makes a room have energy. That's what gives a room soul. And so, yeah, definitely learning people and relationships, and it definitely prepared me for that, especially in the way of how I communicate to people and how I, mm-hmm. how I learn people and how I relate to people.
Now, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So these two, Emily and Simon, have given me a lot of flack for scheduling. Scheduling meals on my Google Calendar like 1 or 2 weeks in advance. But I feel like that's a good way to be intentional with relationships, to make sure you see all the people you want to see. Mm-hmm. And so as someone who's very community oriented, who has spoken about their own intentionality when it comes to relationships.
She's begging for you to say it's okay.
That's completely fine and even good, right?
I would say so, yes.
Thank you.
I would have to say yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Absolutely. I do love a decal.
Okay.
Oh,
I do love a decal.
Oh, we do too.
Yeah, we do.
We do think there's an intentionality in spontaneity, though.
Is there?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Because when you're spontaneous, you actively have the choice of what to do in that moment. And choosing to do this with this person instead of something else with another is also something that's very important.
Yes.
And two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Also, the thrill of the spontaneity you associate with the person that you're doing it with. So you have that, like,
even if it's a bad experience, too.
Okay, miss attribution.
I have anxiety, though.
Yeah, see, it's this all psychology. Mm-hmm. And I am a psychology major as well.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. Okay.
But I'm very curious, what about psychology are you most fascinated about? And what are you writing your thesis about?
If oh my God.
Ask that question.
No, yeah, please ask it, because I love what I'm writing my thesis about. Okay, so I am a psychology major, as we all know. But I want to focus on industrial organizational psychology.
Okay.
You can think of that like work psychology. Yeah. But it's a psychology of environments, of people. Usually HR is very heavy in that government work.
They make a lot of money. The IO psychologists make a lot of money. That's all, the only thing I know.
Yeah, well, I've been like,
I might need to go into this.
Well, listen up, Simon.
No, yeah, I'm not ready.
Here we go. But I just think that it's such a cool field. And I discovered that I thought it was a cool field because of my thesis research. Mm-hmm. So it's a continuation from my JP research.
Okay.
But what I'm doing for my thesis is I am researching how race, leadership style, and success in a task or completion of a task, how that impacts the forgiveness of female leaders in the workplace, and by extension, the perception of female leaders in the workplace.
Okay.
So the two groups that are in the study, rather that are in the stimuli of the study, are white female leaders and black female leaders. The two leadership styles are agentic and communal. Communal is more democratic, more warm. Agentic is more more dominant, more direct, a little bit more in control of the room, or in control of the direction of the room, let's say. And task completion is just whether or not the leader makes a mistake. And so I want to compare how all of those different factors working together, how that will impact the perception of a female leader's ability and likability and competence in a room. And I think that is such an important thing to talk about and to discuss, because I think a lot of people know about the glass ceiling for women in terms of leadership and making money. But a topic that I don't really think is discussed as much as it should be is the glass cliff. And the glass cliff, I think, is such an interesting topic. So the glass cliff, for those that don't know, is a phenomenon where the higher a woman climbs in leadership, that is, she's more likely to fall lower because of the heights that she has risen to. Mm-hmm. And specifically, that's because she is not receiving the support that's necessary in the workplace in order to stay in that higher position.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when companies are failing or when they're about to go bankrupt, there's actually a phenomenon that they'll bring in a female leader or a female CEO to come and chart the downfall. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they won't tell her that. And so they won't give her the support to actually help the company rise back to its successful place. And, you know, it's just so built in bias and so built in discrimination. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I can confidently say that it's on purpose or purposeful of these leaders, but that is a thing that happens. And so I think that it's so important to talk about just the place of women in leadership, but also of black women in leadership, because that just carries so many stereotypes. Black women, period, carry so many stereotypes, but also carry so many stereotypes in leadership. Honestly, I'd say the main, I don't know, how long can I talk about this?
Can I
just keep going?
No, yeah, keep going.
Keep going.
Keep going.
But I would say one of the coolest things about it to me is the fact that being a woman and being black are two things that are both incongruent with leadership.
Okay.
I would say the most congruent identity with leadership is a white straight man at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, I'm looking at gender and I'm looking at race. And I'm just really excited to look at the interaction of race, of gender, and especially the success in the workplace. Because I think that competence is a really important and really cool thing to explore in a workplace, too, because you can like someone, but that doesn't mean that you respect them as a leader.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that you respect their direction in the room where they're taking this task. And I was just excited to see it all come together and see it all interact.
Wait, so are you performing a study, like, using Princeton students?
Yeah. I'm actually doing it with the general public.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah.
You're using Sona for that? Or
Prolific.
Prolific.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yep, yep, yep. It's a public experiment platform that people send their studies out on.
That's wait, that's so cool.
I'm so excited.
Psychology students have to run their own study usually, right?
If they choose that type of thesis, then then they have to actually run their own study and send it out.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. Wow. You're doing that. I took my first semester. I took a class from Susan Fiske. Love and
she was my JP advisor.
No way.
Yeah, she's retired now.
It makes a lot of sense because a lot of the stuff, you know, her research was pioneering that sort of like competence, warmth, like that sort of
it was
interactions, which is so
absolutely cool. You're so right. And once I, you know, sat down and had my first meeting with her, it was so funny because I realized that about half of the research that I had her name on it.
I'm talking to this woman,
and she's just talking to me very comfortably, very casually. Yeah. You know, just we're just talking as two peers, as two academic people discussing research, and her name is on these papers. And she's just chatting me about this research that she has just done in her life. And I read about it a week prior.
Yeah.
So it was so cool. I'm so glad you got to take her class.
It's awesome to hear you, because we kind of went through a little bit of like units of like, oh, here are the interactions of like race and here are the interactions of gender. But what you're doing, merging those two things. The
intersectionality, like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see the findings.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm also kind of excited for my hypothesis to not be in line with the results. Okay. It's not really a matter of being right or wrong, because it's just the way that the results go. However they go is what the results of the study are. But so my current hypotheses are that. I'm actually currently writing this up right now, so let's see. Let's see if I got it.
Oh my goodness.
All right. So my current hypotheses are that for agentic leaders, when they make a mistake, white female leaders will be forgiven more than black female leaders. When they do not make a mistake, white female leaders will also, again, be forgiven more than black female leaders. For communal leaders, when they do not make a mistake, white female leaders will be forgiven more than black female leaders, or perceived more positively, let's say. But the thing that I'm really interested in is I'm actually really interested in all of it. But the thing that I think will be different than those other results, as obviously they're all the same, is that when communal leaders do make a mistake, I think that white female leaders and black female leaders will actually be rated comparatively low, comparably low, let's say, for that condition.
So you think communal leadership is a really, like, that's affecting it more in some way? Mm-hmm. Like, or there's some sort of bigger...
I wouldn't say more, but differently.
Yeah.
I would assume that the levels will be pretty similar throughout. It's the disparity that's really what the hypothesis is, because I can't really hypothesize about how much, you know, someone will actually respect this leader or believe in their leadership capacity past what the condition is. But and so it's more about the disparity. But I would say that it's not necessarily that it's bigger or less than. I would just say that for agency and for communality, there will just be different results.
Right.
Because for communality, communal, let's say the communal aspect of a leader calls attention to femininity because women are stereotypically warmer, more democratic, more communal. Right. And so when a leader is communal, that's calling attention to femininity, which is, again, incongruent with leadership. Mm-hmm. So that's how that's going to affect that result. But for agency, that is also incongruent with leadership, but only when it's placed on a woman, because femininity is incongruent with leadership, but agency is more congruent with leadership, just as a as an adjective. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there interactions between those stereotypes with race, though, too? Does that that must make it harder for you to like study, right?
Yeah. Harder, definitely, but also so much more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So there, guys, wow, I love that we're talking about this right now. So there are two hypotheses that I think will be interacting when looking at agency and communality for the black female leaders. And those two hypotheses are the double jeopardy hypothesis and the intersectional invisibility hypothesis.
Okay.
So the double jeopardy hypothesis says that a black female leader will be doubly discriminated against because of her blackness and her womanhood, two things that are incongruent with leadership. Right. And that is why she will not be, let's say, allowed, end quotes, to rise to higher levels of power and of responsibility. Yeah. But the other one, the intersectional invisibility hypothesis, says that because those two, let's say, those two parts of that identity for the leader, they will interact. And instead of causing a double discrimination, it'll actually just cause invisibility. Mm. So this person will be allowed to rise to higher ranks of power, but they won't really be regarded as a person. They won't be regarded positively or negatively, but they just won't really be regarded for their personhood in the environment. Mm. So though they'll be allowed to rise to these ranks of power, they won't necessarily get the same support that that another leader would. They wouldn't necessarily get the same recognition that another leader would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's definitely one of the things that will contribute to it for a black female leader.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, as president of CAP, would you say you exercise agentic or communal leadership?
Oh, that's so fun.
Look at you.
Whoa.
What a beautiful tie-in. That was wonderful.
Swivel back, yeah.
I want to say I know how to exercise either when it calls for it in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that I try not to have one personality when it comes to my leadership, because I'm very aware that different environments and different situations call for different things.
Yeah.
And I think in order to be a good leader, you have to know when to defer to someone else that mm-hmm. knows a bit more than you in the room. You have to know when to call the room to attention to move on. And so I'd say a mix of both whenever it calls for it, because I'm very aware of the fact that a leader can make or break a room.
Right.
And especially when it's a club like this and a club that I care about and a club that I know a lot of people care about as well, obviously the membership. And so I know that it's important to be, again, intentional with mm-hmm. how I lead anything that I do or how I lead any room. So when the situation calls for agency, I'll be agentic. When mm-hmm. it calls for communality, I'll be that. And when it calls for neither, I'll do that too.
Now let me ask you something.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
What's the craziest thing that has happened during your administration? And like, how did you respond as a leader?
Let's see. What's the craziest thing, Sophia? I want to say, okay, so have any of you heard of Crave? Crave.
Yeah.
Crave,
I
in
yes.
all capital letters, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So Crave was probably the craziest thing that has happened during our administration so far. Crave was a big event. Crave was meant to be a big event for the spring.
Okay.
We weren't quite satisfied with it, but that's because all hell broke loose.
What happened?
So the list got big. We had some communication snafus. People were very enthusiastic, because I'm sure we've all been in an enthusiastic line.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it was a regular enthusiastic line, but just about four times the amount.
Oh,
and
wow.
So everything that could have just gone wrong,
like
it did.
Astroworld.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. It's so concerning, because people are so energetic in these lines, but mm-hmm. it's so dangerous.
Yeah, it is so dangerous.
Why are you not caring about the person that's next to you?
Yeah.
So that was probably the main. That was probably the craziest thing that has happened during the administration. And I'd say the way that I responded to it is we sat down and we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
What went wrong? Yeah. What do we do better next time? Why did this happen in the first place? Because I think that was really important for all of us to understand, especially
yeah.
because at that point we hadn't even been officers for that long, because we were all elected in February of that same semester. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The cycle goes February, which means that this coming February, we'll also be getting voted out.
Mm.
Or let's say, moving out, not voted out. it's just a question of asking where it went wrong. What can we do right next time? I think that we've learned a lot of lessons, especially mm-hmm. from that night. It's just a matter of moving on and taking the knowledge and leaving the things that didn't work.
Well, I do know that CAP it's known to have really great events, like the Kathmandu.
Oh, you're speaking of myself.
Oh, yeah.
Boxers and Blazers.
Now,
got some great parties.
Yeah. Sorry. I feel like you probably have a unique perspective about the eating clubs, because you're not just CAP president, you're also on the Interclub Council at Princeton, which is composed of all the eating club presidents. But like, what do you think, if anything, should change about the eating club process? Because I know there's talk of like elitism and exclusivity. So like, what's your take there?
What's my take there? Honestly, I would say I'm always a champion for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always a champion for clarity. And I think, honestly, especially coming from Hotchkiss, where I wouldn't say elitism was as prominent there, but it was definitely still relevant, because I really do think that Hotchkiss is just a smaller version of Princeton, and all boarding schools, not even just Hotchkiss,
mm-hmm.
all boarding schools are a smaller version of all the Ivies and all the big colleges. But I would say that clarity is probably just the most important thing in that process. I think that people try their, some people try their best to be as clear as possible. But I also think that elitism is a thing that's very important to some individuals here. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a thing that harms those people that don't, that maybe don't know how to make the connections, maybe don't know how to enter those rooms, maybe don't even have the ability to mm-hmm. enter those rooms where these things are being discussed, where these clubs are being discussed, where they even know what time a bicker session is. And I think that that's not really as much of an issue, especially with the ICC, because, you know, we're trying to be communicative. Right. Josh Cohen, our VP, he set up Fall Street Week. And so having times available on the website, sending out communication weekly to sophomores to let them know, well, sophomores in the spring, of course, mm-hmm. but to let them know what's happening. I would say that just clarity. I think that elitism controls a lot of things here. And I mm-hmm. think that that harms a lot of people that aren't able to enter those rooms where elitism is very present. And I don't think that that's going away anytime soon, because frankly, the school was built on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that at the very least, the effects of that can be mitigated by just allowing people into the room and allowing different voices, especially in things like a bicker process. When I think about an officer corps, I think about, you know, a bigger committee, who is choosing the people that are getting into the club and how important it is to have different voices in that room.
Right.
So I think it's about diversity, and I think it's about clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask somewhat off topic, but in June of 2020, the summer before your freshman year, the advice you gave to your future self was keep your head up. That is a simple phrase. I would mean everything that comes with it. You'll face challenges. You'll doubt yourself. You'll change your mind. You'll apologize, and that's okay. You won't be perfect all the time, but I want you to try to keep your head up and remember your worth. So you're now a senior in college. Do you feel like you followed your own advice? And do you have any examples of times that you followed your advice?
That's a beautiful quote, by the way. Yeah, that's crazy.
I loved it. You guys sent to me, I was like, whoa.
I was looking over to see if you were going to start crying. I was like...
I did shed a tear. You guys didn't see it, though. It's okay. I'm so happy to say that, mm-hmm. I do feel like I followed that advice. Frankly, I don't think that I had a choice. I don't think that I would have survived the school. And not necessarily that I've gone through anything harrowing, but I think the school changes everyone. Obviously, we're all growing up here. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that if I hadn't allowed myself the chance to change, the chance to be wrong, that I would be the same person that I am here and happy with here today. Some examples... See, I would say the clearest examples in my head are some friendships that I've lost along the way. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they hurt. And I can't say that I've ever really lost relationships before I came to Princeton. I grew up in the same city my entire life. And a lot of people in that city were pseudo family to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't just a family as blood. It was a family as water. And water was just as thick as the blood.
Sure.
And so I was very comfortable and very familiar with keeping close relationships. And when I came here, and, you know, I've had so many experiences in the past couple of years where people are changing at the same time as I am, and you don't always change the same way with the mm-hmm. person that's right. next to you. And so having to deal with that, I would say, is probably the most important thing to this question and to that quote especially. Because sometimes I was wrong. Sometimes other people were wrong. Sometimes there was no one that was wrong. And sometimes people just change. Mm-hmm. And I think just allowing myself to be sad about losing something, to make something new, and knowing that I don't have to stay the exact same. I can feel like I lost something, and I can feel like I didn't succeed because I lost something. And that's still okay, because mm-hmm. I'm still going to keep going, and I'm still going to go and make a new friendship, make a new relationship, go join a new group. So I'll say, yeah. And I learned that a lot with relationships here and mm-hmm. what exactly I wanted them to look like and the ones that I wanted around me. Yeah,
I'm very glad. Now, coming full circle since my poem there at the beginning.
Yes.
So you're part of the Songline Slam Poetry at Princeton. So before coming to Princeton, did you have experience writing poetry, and especially like performing it in the sort of slam fashion?
You know, actually not a bit.
Really?
Not a whisper, actually. Wow. But what I did do with slam poetry is that I've always loved watching them. Mm-hmm. I've always loved watching them. There are a couple of channels that I love. My favorite one is probably Button Poetry. I would strongly recommend very talented people on mm-hmm. that platform. And I had never performed it myself. Honestly, as I've been thinking about my journey with slam poetry, I realized that I've probably been saying poems in my head for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm a singer. I will sing a song. And I don't mean like sing on a stage, but like I will be humming a song in the pool room. Known for that, I think. and so because of that, I think I've always known that I had an inclination towards poetry mm-hmm. and towards, you know, rhythmic and lyrical things like that. But I didn't start before I came here. And then when I came here, I had a couple of friends that were in a group. I had a very good friend that was in the group, and they introduced me to it. And I wrote my first poem, and I loved it. And I loved it. And it came so naturally. And I think it came so naturally because it was already in my head. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I think that my hand might have just been waiting for me to put the thoughts yeah. out of my brain and onto a paper. And that's why I think it came so naturally. And I think it still comes so naturally. It's because I had the thoughts, and it was just time to put them down.
To put them down.
And say them out loud.
What's the difference
yeah.
between writing and performing for you? Do you feel like you find something else new about the poem when you're performing it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would say, so one of my favorite poems that I've written and performed is called Plight of the Pretty Lady. Mm-hmm. And it's a poem about... It's a poem about protecting yourself. It's a poem about knowing yourself and feeling very secure and protective over your environment, but mm-hmm. in a way that's, of course, protective over yourself, not necessarily in a way of attack or in a negative way, just a very positive, self-focused mm-hmm. kind of poem. And I would say that writing that poem, I realized how much more power there were in some of the lines and in some of the words, mm-hmm. or let's say performing that poem. I realized yeah. that there is much more power in some of the words than I initially thought. And usually when I'm writing for songline, I actually write to perform. Okay. I don't really write just word poems. When I'm right. writing a poem,
I think about it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm thinking about it and I'm almost performing it as I yeah. go and like uh-huh. figuring out what pace I want to use for this part yeah. and what tone I want to use for that part. So I would say that that's probably one of the main parts of the process. And I realize a lot of the power that's mm-hmm. in the words when I'm doing that and when I'm performing it versus when I'm writing it.
Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. Is there any footage of you performing any poetry?
You know what? I think there are a couple of videos out there. I think
out
there are.
Oh my
Everybody
gosh.
Check them out.
No, I'm gonna. If we can find them, do we have permission to put them in the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. So given that we can find them, you'll start hearing them right here.
When you walk into my forest, please step with ease. My skin, adorned with delicate and daring decoration, crumbles easily, like petals. My shell does not deserve aggression in the form of your footsteps. It much prefers starlight in the touch of your fingertips, the gentle quality of your quiet, and the wonder of the winding of your mind. When you walk into my forest, step with ease. My flowers may bloom with the blessings of beauty, but that does not mean they request your touch. My flowers may dance with the colors of the wind, but that does not mean the wind is calling you to me. It is not whistling to the sound of your heartbeat. It never will. When you walk into my forest, tread lightly. The passion sliding and slicing through my stem will silence you quickly, quietly. When it bites through the bitter bits of your flesh, you will not bleed the color of your passion, but of mine. Your body will drip with all the richness of the purple that washes over me. And no, you will not fret. You asked for this. You begged. When you think of walking into my forest, don't. Your mind tricks you into thinking we are a trusty pair, that we are a match made in heaven, but we are anything but. Our union is bathed in pain, wrapped in your wrongdoings, and striped with all the sadness these hands refuse to hold. The sadness is not mine, the anger is. Do you think that because my purple does not shine as brightly as the moon, that your darkness can deaden it? Do you think that because your eyes cannot look away from my beauty, that your hands deserve to touch? My name is Belladonna, yes, but I am not your pretty lady. I am the protector of this earth around me. I am both the holder of poison and the blade with which it is yielded. I will not bend to your whim. Your whims mean less to me than the pretty pupils I was plucked for. When you come into my forest, turn around. You are not welcome here. The aggression in your footsteps is no match for the power in my roots. Your body knows it does not belong. Leave now. Another lady awaits, and she will show you again just what it means to be pretty.
Whoa, that's crazy.
You did such a great job. We just listened
to
that.
Yeah, wow, that was amazing.
That was so good. That was crazy.
Who wrote that?
Now we're going to swivel into Simon's favorite segment here.
My favorite segment. This semester we've been doing the segment Fizz or Fib. Fizz is the social media app of Princeton that not many people are on. It seems like everybody's on there.
Simon is
there.
Posting 24/7 though.
24/7.
He's Princeton's top fizzer.
And like you came in today, you said I actually posted 3 times on Fizz today.
You posted three times on Fizz today.
Three times.
I did. I don't think I've ever posted on Fizz until today.
Are you proud of yourself?
I'm super proud of myself. My one Fizz got 63 upvotes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You're,
not trying to toot my own horn.
With Fizzflation, that's what.
Fizzflation.
Oh my god.
She always talks about every time I said, "Oh, my Fizz or whatever." Like you know, when I posted my
because your Fizzes get like upwards of 600 upvotes.
Well, maybe
that's
they're
not
just
real.
Funny. Maybe
she said
really
they're not
funny.
Real.
I guarantee you, there are 50 or less people on the app that go to Princeton University.
You think they're bots? Simon's creating fake accounts just so he can get his like count up.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah,
he would.
500 fake bots. Accounts on his phone right now.
Wait, what motivated you to post? Thrice on.
I was
Fizz today.
I was feeling inspired, and I hadn't joined Songline Slam poetry yet.
Okay, I see.
Can we hear the top one?
Do you remember it?
You do. It was
you
your 63
it.
Up.
You know,
yeah.
You know it. Pull out the phone. You know it.
It was just like LaJaja's first poem. She was like. It was coming out of you. It was just flowing.
Yeah,
out of you.
Just ready. I honestly don't even remember what I wrote because it was just like the brain to the thumb connection.
To the thumb connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
traveled down your arm.
Yeah,
just went there.
You guys are just gonna have to check it out. Check it out yourselves.
So
anyway,
yes, there
the
you
segment
go.
Is called Fizz or Fib, in which I read you two statements, and one is a fizz, and one is something that we came up with, and you can decide which one's the fizz.
Okay.
Oh my god, we're starting off strong.
These are low-key crazy.
Okay. breast milk in my microfridge. That has 2 upvotes. So 2 people saw that and were like, you know what, I agree.
They said relatable.
Which I don't even know how to, like, it's a noun phrase. It's not even, there's no verb.
Just a noun phrase.
Just a subject.
No sentence structure there.
So that's that first one, and then second one is...
Read it. Go ahead.
I don't think I should be reading
this. Go ahead.
You read it.
My uterus just finished shedding its lining. Who wants me?
No.
28 upvotes.
The second one has to be the fizz.
Yeah,
the first
true.
One's
that's
the
true?
Fib. Yep.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can relate. I can relate to the second one.
I believe in that.
I would upvote.
2 additional upvotes right there.
Okay, Emily,
so you're one for one. You're one for one right now.
Alrighty.
Wow. Okay, the first one. The school needs to get a Charmin. I'm sorry. I'm gonna start over. The school needs to get a Charmin toilet paper. I'm tired of fingering myself every time I wipe.
Well,
okay. So that one's 16 upvotes. I'm sorry, Mom, that you had to hear me say that. Next one. I just farted in my 80-person lecture. It was silent, but it smells so bad. 12 upvotes.
Oh. Honestly, I really want to say that the first one is the fizz.
Yeah,
it's the fizz.
Right. Yeah, I say that because I have several friends that I know would make that joke.
Yeah. Or have. I think
yeah,
I
yeah, yeah. Yeah. have made the joke.
And also relatable. I'd give it an upvote.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, last one. First one is, today I had my panties in a wad, in a more literal sense, ..
Interesting.
443 upvotes.
Fizzflation.
And then the second one is, if you are not showering regularly, people can tell, especially people you live with who are too nice to tell you directly, ..
Is that a subtweet?
Yeah, seriously. It's like targeted.
192 upvotes there.
Interesting. Can I hear the first one again?
Today I had my panties in a wad, in a more literal sense.
Let's see. I'm going to say the second one is a fizz because it was a subtweet.
You're so good.
Wow.
You're so good.
Are you
oh
on
my
fizz?
God.
Are you
I'm
sure?
Not.
3 for 3.
That was insane.
Wow.
Wow.
I'm so happy. If I got one wrong, I was going to leave her upset.
You killed that. Our final segment is, it's called Message in a Bottle.
Ooh.
So the way it works is that our last guest asks a question of the next guest, but they don't know who the next guest is.
Okay.
And so the question they had for you was, who would you bring for spring lawn parties that would be like obtainable and realistic to
and you
get.
Feel like, yeah, within the budget and people would like and like
wait,
the perfect
oh my gosh. Okay, wait, hold on. I need like 10 seconds. Yeah. Who would I bring for spring lawn parties? Hey guys, fun fact, I was on stage with Flo Milli.
What?
Last spring
what?
Lawn parties.
How's that?
Yeah, if you went. I had friends in USG.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So I was literally on stage. Low-key, I would say bring her back, but that's a cop out. So I'm gonna do another one. Who's attainable? You know, guys, I actually don't know. I would just say another black female rapper. I can't lie. Mm-hmm. I would just like another one. Mm-hmm. She would have the energy and everyone would have a great time.
And so now you get to ask a question of our next guest, and you don't know who it is.
Okay. So let's see. Assuming that there are more tunnels beneath this campus. Wow, similar to the
catacombs.
Exactly. What is the wildest thing that you think you would find?
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you just come up with that just now?
I did.
That's
yeah.
crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, I was like, you were ready to go.
The poetry creativity is wild. Wow.
It's flowing
for real.
That's another poem for you.
Oh my God. You're so right.
Yeah.
The hidden treasure.
Assuming.
Whoa.
There are tunnels under this campus. Yeah, I think I should perform.
Yeah, that's enough.
That's,
I think
that's
you, I think.
Simon performing poetry.
Whoa. I feel like I have the power within me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Totally.
Well, thank you so much, Jay, for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
Had a blast.
Wonderful.
Do you have anything you want to plug of yours?
Do I have anything I want to plug of mine? Let's see. So, if I can, Kathmandu is next weekend. It's going to be the event of the fall. And if you can get a pass, I want to see you there.
Good
passes
luck.
Are hard. Passes yeah. are hard. Good.
But
that was a good
besides,
plug.
Thank you. But besides Kathmandu, Kat Bicker is in the spring.
That's also
indeed.
True.
Indeed.
If I see you, I see you.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. She's a good president, folks.
Yes.
I guess I will plug the Bechdel test.
I thought you were going to plug Tiger Launch again.
Actually, Tiger Launch application's closed today, so.
Oh, yeah.
Aww. I'm so sad.
Aww. Tiger Launch is the world's largest student run entrepreneurship
competition. Oh, my God. No.
Shucks.
Oh, no. It's a big deal. Anyway, follow the Bechdel test. Give us a 5 stars anywhere you get your podcasts.
Yep.
And tell your friends. Nothing works like a recommendation.
So. Also, head over to Tico's and get yourself a happy time.
And milk and cookies.
If you're feeling blue.
Get yourself an
And I guess milk and cookies.
Yeah. Amen. All right, folks. And that's it.
Signing off.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.